Recording in progress.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the meeting of our Board of Supervisors planning meeting for Thursday, September 11th. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll to establish quorum.
Supervisor Marquez?
Present.
Supervisor Tam?
Present.
Supervisor Miley excused. Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Present.
President Haubert?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We'll start with the saluting to the flag. If you all could rise if you can and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would also like to say that the supervisors recognize members of the public that participate in our meetings, both in person and remotely. We welcome you. We appreciate your participation. Those that would like to speak in person can fill out a speaker slip and give it to the clerk, and the clerk will now provide brief instructions on how to participate remotely.
Detailed instructions are provided in the teleconferencing guidelines. A link to the document is included in today's agenda. If you are joining the meeting using a computer, use the button at the bottom of your screen to raise your hand to request to speak. When called to speak, please unmute your microphone and state your name. If you are calling in, dial *9 to raise your hand to speak. When you are called to speak, the host will enable you to speak. If you decide not to speak, notify the clerk when your call is unmuted, or you may simply hang up and dial back into the meeting. As a reminder, you may always just observe the meeting without participating by clicking on the View Now link on the county's webpage at acgov.org. When called, you will have 2 minutes to speak. Please limit your remarks to the time allocated. Public comment will generally alternate between in-person and online speakers as determined by the president of the board and subject to overall time limits. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I note that we have a request from staff to move items 9 and 10 to the beginning of the meeting just after the consent calendar. Is there any objection to doing that? Seeing not, we will adjust the agenda accordingly. I have also received a request to continue item number 7 to our next meeting, so that will simply be continued to our next planning meeting. With that said, I note we also do not have closed session today. Instead, we'll proceed with the next item, which is our consent calendar.
President Haubert, could we clarify on the record that the next meeting is on October 9th?
On October 9th. The next meeting of October 9th. The planning meeting is October 9th. Thank you. A consent calendar is item number 3, and I will move approval and seek a second. Motion's been made and seconded to approve the consent calendar. Do we have any public comment on item 3, consent calendar?
No speakers.
Seeing none, I'll ask the roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Marquez?
Aye.
Supervisor Tam?
Aye.
Supervisor Miley excused. Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Aye.
President Haubert?
Aye.
I'd like to move the approval of the minutes. It's actually item number 1, the July 10th meeting.
Thank you. I missed that. Motion to move approval of the minutes, item 1. Moved and seconded. Is there any public comment on item 1? Seeing none, I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Supervisor Marquez?
Aye.
Supervisor Tam?
Aye.
Supervisor Miley excused. Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Aye.
President Haubert?
Aye. Thank you for noting that. That's teamwork. Good job. Our next item then is going to be item 9, which we moved up to the beginning of our regular calendar. Is there a brief staff report on item 9?
The staff recommendation on item number 9 related to the appeal on UBAS Court is to continue this item to a future hearing. There's a companion code enforcement case related to this one that are very similar, and so to combine those and have the board hear this one time, the recommendation is to continue the item. I understand that there was also a discussion going on with the parties about a possible continuation. So,
very good. Is there a need to make a motion and a vote on that, Council?
There would be, and I think I would suggest, at least our office would suggest, that the continuation be into your November meeting, which is November 13th, based on the timing of the action, of the anticipated action by the Board of Zoning Adjustment, the appeal period, and other noticing requirements.
And would that need a motion and a vote?
Yes, please.
Okay, then I'll move that we continue item 9 until the November 13th meeting.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any public comment on this topic?
One.
We do have one public comment so far, and we'll allow 2 minutes for public comment.
Good morning. My name is Chuck Meadows, and I'm the adjacent neighbor that's been impacted by this matter and one of the parties that are bringing the appeal to this board. First, I want to acknowledge code enforcement's and planning's involvement in the matter and continuing to bring this to your attention so that we can get this matter resolved and finally and hopefully abated after 5 years. This has been going on. I filed my first complaint in May of 2020. I've given each of you a packet summarizing the evidence of the case. The matter is overwhelming that the importation occurred, and it's overwhelming as to who did the dumping and where they did the dumping. I'd like to see this matter resolved, and hopefully in November, when it comes back to the board on appeal, we can finally bring closure to this and begin abatement next spring. Thank you.
Very good. Any other public comment? Motion's been made and seconded to continue this item until November 13th meeting. Roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Marquez.
Aye.
Supervisor Tam.
Aye.
Supervisor Miley excused. Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Aye.
President Halbert.
Aye. Very good. Our next item is item 10, adopting a notice and resolution of intent to consider the vacation of the terminus last 1,000 feet of Morrison Canyon Road. Is there a brief staff report?
Supervisors, I understand that this item actually is within the Public Works Agency, and so I believe that there's Public Works Agency staff here as well as online to discuss this issue.
Public Works, you're up. Is there somebody online from Public Works? Yeah. Daniel DW has their hand raised.
You're on the line. DW, you're on the line. DW, can you hear us? You're on the line.
Did he drop off?
He's coming back. DW, you're on the line. Please unmute. We're unable to hear you.
Can I recommend that we receive public comment on this item because it is in our agenda as presented, and then if we can get the director technology working.
Yeah, of course, Mr. President. I would just say that as I understand the matter to be simply a matter of requesting action by your board to schedule the hearing and to give notice of a hearing on the request that has been received by the Public Works Department for the vacation of a portion of the roadway at the terminus or end of Morrison Canyon Road. You will not be considering the merits of the action today. Your only action being that is being asked of you to be taken today is to schedule the hearing and to provide public notice thereof. So you certainly can take and should take public comment on the request for the scheduling of the hearing.
Very good. With that brief staff report, thank you. And noting what is in our packets and posted online, we will proceed with public comment. We always do public comment of members of the public in person first three, and then online, rotating back and forth. First speaker, please.
The first three speakers are Chris George, Aaron, and Anika.
Welcome.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Chris George. I'm the applicant requesting the road to be vacated. I want to comment on a couple of quick things. First, there's some confusion on whether or not the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission is opposed to the road vacation. They are not. When we started the process to vacate the road, we sent out information to all the parties surrounding us, including the SFPUC. They responded mistakenly in July of 2023, thinking that they had an easement on our property. We then hired a landman, which actually is a woman, who did an amazing job of researching whether or not there was an easement or a survey done all the way back to 1878. We presented all this to the SFPUC, and in April of this year, they agreed that they have no easement and no concerns about the road being vacated. This was signed by a judge, and you all have a copy. Secondly, there is a so-called petition from the opposition that will be talked about today and has been talked about before. It was not done by an outside company. It was done by the men that have been harassing and victimizing my family for over a decade. It was simply a QR code square that is unverifiable and is not credible at all. Lastly, the group that calls themselves the Mission Peak Conservancy is not an entity at all. They are neither a C Corp nor a nonprofit organization or even registered anywhere. They have no budget, and according to them, they have no members. What they do have is one of their founders, William Ryrigi, was arrested on a park property for assault. From what I have heard, he threw a bike rider into a ravine. How he is able to still continue to walk on park property is beyond me. This group has been harassing me and my family for over a decade. They have no credibility at all. Vacating this road will make it safe for all the people that travel on Morrison Canyon Road. It will make it safe for the first responders that travel the road, and will eliminate a liability and an expense for Alameda County. Vacating this road is a no-brainer. Thank you.
Aaron? Good morning. I'm here to be in favor for the abandonment of the portion of this road. I'm a contractor. We've done a lot of work in the area. Our company is based in the area, and most importantly with regards to the road is the park went and paid special money, extra money and extra time to create a turnaround area at the end of their property, a turnaround for the public. Beyond that area is the area that we're talking about closing. So currently, by having a turnaround area in the middle of a roadway with two-way traffic is a hazard. There is nothing else between that turnaround area and Mr. George's property other than 800 feet of road. I'd appreciate you listening to this, and thank you.
Good morning, staff. My name is Annika Wasserfall, and I am here today to show my support to the Georges in vacating the 1,000 feet of road. I have witnessed endless examples of the unsafety that occurs for them and the community. Vacating the road would prevent the unsafe behaviors that you know today, clarify ownership, and ensure that the turnaround built specifically for emergency use is finally used as intended. The George family has shouldered the burden of maintaining this road since 2004 at their own expense, showing their commitment to safety. Formalizing this change isn't just about private property, it is about ensuring quicker, safer, and more effective responses for the entire community. I stand by this request in vacating.
Kelly, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to point out additional inaccuracies, falsehoods, factual misrepresentations in the staff report. The main one is the idea that this road is essentially a private driveway, is being used as a private driveway. As is well known to anybody who goes there on a daily basis, and there are a number of people who do that, members of the public, the people who signed the petition, these people were not paid, and the petition was not sponsored by the property owner. It was sponsored by members of the public. The property owner sponsored his own petition, so he's paid for a petition. He's paid for a contractor to come up and speak today. He's paid for one of his employees to come up and speak today. In fact, if you look back at all the speakers and over the several public hearings, you find out that most of the people were being paid to show up, or maybe they weren't being paid. They were just family members who showed up out of the goodness of their hearts. And the so-called private driveway is actually a recreational trail and a bikeway. And a horse riding equestrian trail. So a number of people go up and down for their personal, natural, recreational benefits. This is perhaps the only place in Fremont where you can actually see buffaloes. There's a number of buffaloes there. It's quite scenic, and I'd urge you to continue to keep this available to the public as it has been since 1878, as was pointed out here. Thank you.
A. George, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Adam George. I'm not here today just as a property owner, but someone who's lived this road alongside for many years. I've seen firsthand how it's evolved. And I've also seen the confusion and safety concerns that come with the unclear boundaries. Let me be clear, my family does own both sides of the road, all the way to the center line. We're not asking for public land to be given away. We already own it. What we're asking for is a formal vacation of the last 1,000 feet of the road, just before the turnaround. This isn't about limiting access. It's about aligning ownership and responsibility. This change will clarify property lines, reduce liability risk, improve safety for everyone involved. The public is not losing access to the land that doesn't belong to them. Instead, we're creating a cleaner, safer boundary that reflects the reality of the ground. After living here and seeing the challenge firsthand, I believe this change is necessary and overdue. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Sarju Naran, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. We do need to raise serious concerns about the persistent and invasive opposition from individuals associated with the Mission Peak Conservancy, particularly Mr. Abreu, who we just heard from, and William Yaragi. Their actions over the years have gone far beyond ordinary civic involvement. Instead, reflects an unhealthy fixation with the George family and their private lives. For more than a decade, these individuals have made it their mission to interfere with virtually every aspect of the George family's use of their property. They've objected not only to legitimate land use matters in the past, but also to deeply personal family events like weddings of the sons of the family, baby showers, holiday gatherings, and other private celebrations. These are normal family milestones, yet they've been treated as opportunities for complaint, disruption, and public criticism. It's targeted harassment. It's not about protecting the environment or serving the public interest. It's important that the Board of Supervisors understands that these objections are not about genuine community concerns, but they stem from ongoing harassment targeted at one family. The road vacation is not about taking something away from the public. It's about safety and fairness for the community benefit, not just for the Georges, but for everyone. While this request is being made by the George family, the safety improvements benefit the broader community. Faster fire response, improved police access, and reduced risks from illegal activities to protect everyone. The support already shown by the East Bay Regional Parks demonstrate this isn't just a private interest. It's a matter of public safety and responsible land use. We know other emergency responders would be in favor of this request as well. Thank you.
The next three in person, Diane McKenna, Teresa George, and Jim Garcia.
Good morning. Good morning, supervisors. My name is Diane McKenna. I'm here this morning to introduce myself as a longtime friend of the Georges. I assure you, I have not been paid to be here this morning. So my experience in this matter has to do with, you know, I visit all the time, the Georges, and I observe and see abandoned cars along the roadway. I observe people trying to turn around and having a lot of trouble doing that. And I feel that vacating the road would improve the safety of the area for everyone, all those trying to go to the parklands and people trying to visit the Georges at their home. And so I appreciate you listening to me today, and thank you.
Hi, my name is Teresa George, and I am the property owner of the road that we're talking about. And I am just here to say that I'm asking for your consideration to please abandon the road and let us keep maintaining it. And to address Mr. Kelly Abreu, it is not a park access road where people hike, ride their bikes, and take trails. It is the end of my road. And Mr. Abreu and Mr. Wairigi are not even allowed to go on that last 1,000 feet, or they will be fined $25,000, as they have to stay away from us, or they will get arrested and fined. Thank you.
Supervisors, my name is Jim Garcia. I'm here as my family's been a landowner in off of Morrison Canyon since the 1860s, long time, and we're here to definitely support the Georges in this action for all the reasons already stated. Thank you.
Harrison George, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, everybody, and chairmen of the board. My name is Harrison George, and I'm here to ask you to vacate the short day of Morrison Canyon Road. Currently, from my experience, that segment of the road is unsafe. It promotes additional nefarious activity that I've seen in early hours of the morning and very late hours of the evening. I would like to make a note that the individual benefit from the views of this property are purely enjoying the benefit at the expense of Chris George, and no other major financial contributed, from my understanding, anywhere else. The buffaloes, so to speak, that were mentioned previously are not county or city owned buffalo. They are George owned buffalo. So the benefit of people seeing those is certainly at the expense of Chris George. Additionally, the configuration of the property allows for some unique activities. There's personal experience of individuals chasing me down the road late in the night, rolling their vehicle and almost starting a fire. We have seen vehicles burned on our fence line as individuals just want to see what happened. This is a relatively straightforward fix of abandoning a portion of the road that is rarely used and does not necessarily promote any potential parking, because from my understanding, there is no parking allowed there. And if we continue to go down, any additional unsafe activities, if any police or ambulances needed to get down to the end of the road late at night without much light, there is not a very safe way for a U-turn to be made. And those additional seconds and moments of need are very crucial. So I'm continually going to be in support of the abandonment of this road. Thank you.
William, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is William Uregi, Mission Peak Conservancy. We have advocated for access to parks since 2014. So for approximately 10, 15 years, we've been advocating for park access. The road in question is owned by the city and the county. They maintain it. The county spent over $157,000 in the last 5 years to maintain the road. If the Georgians are maintaining a public road, that is in violation of county and city ordinance. Only the city and the county should be maintaining that road. Is an issue of public safety. Interesting, the fire that recently started on the George property, which burned down into San Francisco public utility land, that did not start on the public road. That started on their property. So if it's a safety issue, let's shut down the event center. The September 21st wedding that is being planned will bring in many, many people on a narrow, dangerous, and substandard road, which was proven to be a safety issue by George and Buck when they sued the park district. That suit and the settlement thereof required the park district to improve the road, which they did. That settlement proved that the roads were unsafe, which caused Lower Morrison Canyon Road to be shut down by the city to through traffic. That impacted all of those people on Vargas Plateau. And you know, again, it's an issue of safety. George proved the road was narrow, dangerous, and substandard. So why build an event center and then bring in people on those very dangerous roads? It makes no sense. If safety is the issue, shut down the event center. If safety is the issue, put up a gate, lock the gate. Thank you very much.
The last in-person speakers are Nadine, Jerry Hunt, Howard, and Mark.
Good morning, and thank you, Board of Supervisors, for the opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Nadine Flaherty, and I live in Alameda County, specifically Pleasanton. I'm here in support of the vacation of the less than 1,000 feet of roadway on Morrison Canyon Road to the George Ranch. In my personal experiences, on my drive to the ranch, I have encountered a variety of unsafe encounters. Illicit activity in parked cars along the roadway, speeding vehicles on the straightaway, vehicles trespassing onto the ranch, and unsafe turnaround at the ranch gate. I stand here in support of the vacation of the short roadway between the already built turnaround and the George Ranch gate, for the safety of the public, emergency vehicles, and last but not least, the George family. The roadway that is part of the George Ranch properties and not a public roadway. Thank you for your time.
Morning, President Halbert and supervisors. My name is Jerry Hunt. I'm a friend of the George family and also a longtime property owner in Alameda County for over 20 years. I'm here to speak in favor of the vacation of the road. I think there's a number of compelling reasons as to why this makes sense, but one that speaks to me, particularly on this day of remembrance, is the aspects relative to the safety to the first responders. And as the proud father-in-law of a paramedic and firefighter who's fighting the blue fire here in California right now, I'd say any opportunity that we as a public has to make changes in the field that would benefit first responders for life safety and for the benefit of the community is worthy of consideration. So I ask for you to consider that. Thank you.
Hello, Supervisors. Howard Overton, Alameda County property owner. That was a tough speech to follow. I will say I'm neither family nor paid to be here, but I am in support of the applicant's request to vacate the road and improve life safety at their property. I understand today that what you're considering is actually scheduling this for a future date, so I would urge you to take staff's recommendation and do so, at which time you can then hear everybody again and we can talk about it hopefully further. Thank you.
Mark Pleiss, I'm also an Alameda County property owner and a friend of the Georges, and you've had some outstanding comments and just topics here about the clear reasonings of why to abandon this last portion of the road. And what really jumps out to me is what Jerry said, that this is truly a safety issue that just cannot be overlooked, and we support it strongly. Thank you.
No more speakers.
Very good. As I understand, this is simply a motion to approve placing this as a hearing on a future meeting. Is there any discussion or advocacy from any of my colleagues? I'm willing to make that motion.
I can do that as well. I will move that we adopt a notice and the resolution of the intent to consider the vacation at the October 9th meeting.
Very good. I'll second that and ask for a roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Marquez?
Aye.
Supervisor Tam?
Aye.
Supervisor Miley?
Aye.
Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Aye.
President Halbert?
Aye. I'd like to take a 5-minute recess if we could and then come back and finish our agenda, please. We'll recess for 5 minutes. Ready when you are. They're gone. Yeah. Ready?
Okay. Recording in progress.
Okay, we're going to reconvene our meeting. It's 10:41. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll to establish a quorum.
Supervisor Marquez?
I'm present, sorry.
Supervisor Tam?
Present.
Supervisor Miley? Yeah. Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Present.
President Halbert?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Our next item is item listed as item 5. It's our next item, a second reading of an ordinance repealing and reenacting chapter 3.36 and replacing section 12.08.640 of the Alameda County General Ordinance Code. Is there a staff report? It's a second reading, so I think we could probably just have the clerk read the title or make a motion.
President Halbert, yes. There's been discussions between staff and some of the community members on some changes that may warrant returning this to a first reading. But I will have staff
can we have
go
a
through
brief
some of those changes
on this item. Thank you.
Yes, we have a brief staff presentation to address that. Good morning. My name is Ed Labayog. I'm the code enforcement manager for unincorporated Alameda County. Good morning, President Halbert and supervisors. Today we are presenting the second reading to adopt the ordinance. Next page, please. To adopt the ordinance to license and regulate sidewalk vendors in the unincorporated areas of Alameda County. This second reading does fulfill the statutory requirements prescribed in California Government Code Section 25131. So our recommendation is to conduct second reading and adopt an ordinance repealing and reenacting Chapter 3.36. reenacting Chapter 3.36 and repealing Section 12.08.640 of the Alameda County General Ordinance Code to regulate sidewalk vendors in the unincorporated areas of Alameda County, and to find that the ordinance is not subject to CEQA pursuant to Section 15060C2, no direct reasonably foreseeable indirect physical change in the environment, and section 15060C3, not a project of the CEQA guidelines. So this sidewalk vending ordinance aligns unincorporated Alameda County sidewalk vending ordinance and regulations with the state law, SB 946 and SB 972. And it also allows the local restrictions only for objective health, safety, or welfare concerns. And the purpose of this ordinance is intended to promote entrepreneurship and support immigrant and low-income communities. Requires that all sidewalk vendors obtain an annual sidewalk vending permit issued by the Alameda County Planning Department, provides enforcement of permit requirements and operating conditions, and prevent or minimize health and safety and welfare hazards from unregulated vending. Comments were received by the Planning Department about transparency in the ordinance related to regulations and amendments. And a waiver or reduction of fines and fees. Let me get caught up here for a second. And our response to that is that we created an administrative section in the regulations to require a 30-day permitting posting in the county planning webpage for amendment to the regulations. We're going to be providing amendments to notice the MAC chairs within the same 30-day window, hold hearings if needed to air concerns and get public input, provide monthly reports posted to the county website related to fee waivers or ability to pay determinations if any activity is reportable. Next slide. So in terms of next steps, we know that if the ordinance is adopted, it will have 30 days for the effective date after its adoption. The regulation adopted date will be within the 60-day pending notice of public hearing and adoption and any amendments that we would make changes to that draft. The fee adoption date will be within 60 days pending presentation to your board for the fee schedule. And everything related to accepting applications and ready to accept applications from the Alameda County Planning Department, we expect to be within the 90-day period once the regulations and fees are in place. That concludes my presentation. I'll take any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Before we go to public comment, are there any questions or clarifications? Seeing none, I'll ask for public comment. Please recognize before public comment, Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Thank you, President Halbert. I was wondering if there are any additional requirements for sidewalk vending besides the permit and paying the fee. For example, a business license tax or anything else?
Yes. Sidewalk vendors are required to also get a business license, a seller's permit, and if they're selling food, they're required to have a permit from Environmental Health as well.
Thank you. And I think I saw somewhere that the fee may be $275. I'm not sure if that's correct, but I know the fee will be proposed later in the fee schedule to the board, but I'm curious if there's sort of a range for what that fee might be yet, or if you have to go through the sort of regulatory and costing process.
I can try to answer that. So the fee is standardized, is proposed right now at $275, because whether we issue a permit, for example, for a food vendor or someone selling merchandise, it takes the same amount of time for staff to process that permit. That's why we've standardized it. But it is sort of the bare minimum in terms of just our cost to process the paperwork, essentially.
Okay, thank you. And as I read the ordinance, it looks like the regulations may authorize the CDA director or her designee to consider fee waivers, partial or full, depending on economic hardship, nonprofit status, or other issues. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And that's one of the items where we are seeking more transparency by providing a monthly report in those instances where we do offer a fee waiver. I think that's one of the concerns that did come from the community about knowing when that occurred and at what frequency that occurred.
Thank you.
Are there public speakers, public comment speakers? Thank you.
Keith Burrows.
Kelly, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not Keith, and so if Keith wants to talk, go ahead. He can go ahead of me. But I will point out that what we just heard is very vague, because I thought this was a second reading, and everybody already knew what this ordinance was by now. But now we're hearing the operative word by the people who are the staff that are working on this. The operative word is we are amending. There are amendments going on, but there was no detail at all. Zero information on what are you doing to amend this. So what changes are you making? But then there was all this detail. Oh, we're going to have 30 days. We're going to have this. We're going to have that. We're going to have more hearings. We're going to do. So there's this mysterious changes. Mysterious amendments are happening. And I will just throw out a few of the concerns I've heard about these things. You know, when you issue licenses, oftentimes a turnover rate for staff and laborers is very high. So are you licensing each individual who's operating the food cart or whatever, or is it being licensed to the equipment or the cart, or is it to the cart owner? And these are maybe the cart owner and the cart operator are two different people. And then if the cart operators are changing frequently depending on the staff turnover, do they need to get new licenses and every time a new person comes in to operate, like McDonald's? If McDonald's were changing over their staff frequently, would they get new licenses too? It seems like the effort is to really, really clamp down, really tighten up on this. And I will point out that in Fremont, we're getting the same kind of thing. People are complaining about these sidewalk vendors, and there's a lot of effort to really crack down.
Mark Crawford, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, supervisors. Just wanted to chime in on this. I was at the Castro Valley MAC meeting when this came to the MAC, and a lot of the suggestions that were made by the MAC were ignored by staff. A couple of those were to add a scale drawing as a requirement of the permit so that there's 4 feet of ADA space left after one of these carts is set up. Is really, the current requirement is a photo and a drawing, which really isn't gonna verify that you have the ADA access. We've had a situation in Castro Valley at Somerset and Santa Maria where we have a sidewalk vendor. It's been going on for years, and it's generally somebody very young, looks like somebody new to the country. Sitting there all day long. Sometimes it's a young woman with a newborn baby for 9 hours in the hot sun on a summer day. There's no bathroom facilities. So, some of the other requirements by the MAC were, to require bathroom facilities, to require some sort of payroll records and verification of workman's comp. Because the situation that we're having in Castro Valley, these aren't vendor owners. These are people who are being exploited. And I think the logic here is, why wouldn't we want to extend the same health and safety, to these folks that ordinary California citizens have in their workplace, like, breaks, cool areas to cool down, bathroom facilities, workman's comp insurance in case you're injured on the job. All of these things have been ignored. And this has been happening a little bit too much. The whole idea of the roadshow is that these types of ordinances are amended through public comment, and instead it's just staff putting forward what they want and ignoring the public. And that needs to stop, and this needs to be sent back for revisions.
Keith Burrows.
Thank you. I didn't realize we were coming up this soon. Otherwise, I'd be back sooner. And I'm sorry I missed Mr. Crawford's comments. I would like to, first of all, I'd like to thank Supervisor Tam and her her staff, particularly Julie, for getting at least pushing this far forward. This has been going on for about 3 years now in my neighborhood. Like three Saturdays ago, there were we had 17 vendors on the sidewalk. Also a truck, 17 vendors in a one block area, which is close there to my place in San Lorenzo. It's getting out of hand. It is extremely unsafe. The public does not have access to the sidewalk. The neighbors have been telling me that they and their children have to walk into the street with cars parked, going around the cars that are parked, going around the cars that are double parked. I've personally been driving down the street and had been following a car that had to go around a double parked car into the other lane of oncoming traffic. It's really gotten out of hand. I see we have a timetable here for when things are going to affect. It can't go into effect soon enough for me, but I understand things take time. I heard Mr. Crawford talking about the sanitation issues, which I don't need to repeat, but I certainly am concerned about that as well. Anything we can do to make this even stronger, I'm for it. All right, thank you.
No more speakers.
Okay, I'll bring it back for deliberation then. I'll first ask, does staff have any response to some of the public comments that were made, especially those that talk about prior meetings and public input?
Sure. I could make some comments about the ordinance in general. I mean, we have done a roadshow and solicited input from all the various MACs, and that's been going on for quite some time. I think that some of the requirements that people were asking for did seem untenable, given state law. And also, I mean, we do have an insurance requirement in the ordinance for a $1 million comprehensive general liability insurance. That does seem to be a pretty high bar, in my perspective, for a street vendor or a sidewalk vendor to obtain. I've never had obtained that insurance myself. I don't know how difficult that is, but it does seem to be potentially could be a difficult thing for a sidewalk vendor to get. In terms of like workmen's compensation insurance, that wasn't something that we put into the ordinance. And I think that was the other thing that someone had mentioned. But and also there was something about the dimensions. We do have a requirement that they show more or less the square footage of their display area. We also have regs that would limit or does require the 4 feet for ADA clearance. I think that we can figure that out at the staff level in terms of whether or not the folks have that or not. I think Mr. Barrows mentioned about getting this on the books as quickly as possible. We agree. We still have to adopt the fee and adopt the regulations, and we just discussed how we're going to do that by making that publicly available for the public to review. The regulations, other than the changes that were being proposed for the public notification of the fee waivers and the process itself to adopt the regulations, they aren't any different than what the MACs and the public have seen up till now. And so I think we're being consistent in that manner. And, we do a lot of roadshow in the planning department, and this ordinance was no exception.
So then the changes that were made don't trigger having to repeat a first reading?
Well, we put all the changes into the regulations, and those are an administrative approval process. As I explained, that 30-day notification that's done at the staff level. We believe that the ordinance can be read today for the second time, and then it'll be effective in 30 days.
Okay. Questions or comments? Supervisor Tam, I know this is heavy on your soul right now.
Thank you, Chair Halpert. And I also want to express my appreciation to staff for working through this and trying to balance essentially what the state law allows and encourages street vendors because of the importance of trying to provide economic opportunities, and also a lot of the public health and safety concerns that were raised, particularly in the unincorporated area, and also balancing the fact that, you know, basically the unincorporated area abuts against cities. So they also coordinated, like with the city of Hayward, looking at their ordinances, and then some of the areas around Oakland. So I think the modifications that was brought forth, that they are going into the regulations. So I appreciate, you know, the fact that we're lengthening the public comment period, the notification, reporting, making sure that any waivers are posted on the website so people can know and comment on it if they need to. But at the end of the day, we're trying to strike this balance, and we're not trying to create a situation where we're having some competition between the street vendors and the brick and mortars. It's our hope, and through some of the education process, that some of these street vendors could turn into brick and mortar facilities, which requires all the other regulations that Mr. Crawford had mentioned. So I'm supportive of moving this forward, so I am happy to move. Well, actually, we have to have the title of the ordinance.
Let's see if there's any other comments. Any other supervisor make? So we finished with the comments there. I'm supportive in general of street vending to the extent that it doesn't compete with our brick and mortar. I believe that these will. I don't know that there's any way around it when you set up a street vendor right outside a brick and mortar establishment. And that's what I've seen, the same exact food offered at a street sidewalk that is right inside. Does anything in our ordinance protect against that? Or is that even allowable by law? And other questions, are we counting how many vendors we have in an area? Are we allowing one after another on the same street, or is it one per block or one per square mile, or are we allowed to do that by law? We've heard comments about people double parking. Are there traffic studies being done to say that there's enough parking nearby? Restrooms had been mentioned. Is there a requirement that it be set up near a restroom, so a public restroom, so that their own workers can use the restroom? So I agree with striking the balance. I just don't know if there are other things that we can do by law. I also recognize we're balancing state law, so some things we just can't do. But what are the other things that we can do to make sure that workers are protected, make sure that business owners are protected?
Ed Labayo, Code Enforcement Manager. So when we were trying to figure out ways to address the concerns of the brick and mortar, we did include a buffer zone, which we didn't have before, related to the sidewalk vendors being too close to a facility. So stationary sidewalk vendors shall not vend food within 100 feet of a primary entrance of a permanent food facility during the facility's normal operating hours.
So 100 feet. What do other cities do? Is that what other cities do?
I have Jonathan here who did a lot of the research with the
other. What if it was 250 feet? What if it was 500 feet? Is that allowable by law? 100 feet is here to that wall, I think. Maybe a little further, but where do we come up with the 100 feet?
Good afternoon, Chair Halpert, My name is Jonathan Knapp. I'm from the Office of County Council. We did look at ordinances within within Alameda County and surrounding jurisdictions to see how they were handling that particular issue of buffer distances dealing with permanent food facilities. And there is 100 feet seemed like, from working with staff, like an appropriate distance to ensure that we would that you wouldn't have the situation that you referenced, that you'd have a vendor that was selling, you know, the same type of food in front of a permanent restaurant, while also just balancing. There are certain limitations under state law, so that was the. That's where we landed, that's where we landed as staff, and that seemed like relative to the other jurisdictions seemed like a reasonable distance.
So, Supervisor, as a qualifying statement, those provisions are in the regulations; they are not in the ordinance, and so staff has been delegated the authority, the CDA director, to adopt those regulations, and so that's not a part of the ordinance itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to also understand. We can delegate that or not. So maybe we want to have that in the ordinance. I would recommend that. Does it often come in the ordinance? Is it always delegated, these things always delegated to staff? Because, again, this is getting down to what we see on the ground. And it feels like if we have thoughts on that, we should be able to express them.
I would suggest we keep it in the regulations because we put it in the ordinance and we find out that it's too restrictive or we see it needs to be more restrictive, then they kind of bring it back to amend it. If it's in the regulations, they can just do that administratively.
Yeah, but we can't. That's what I'm saying. If we get pressure that 100 feet, I'll just take an example. If we get a lot of phone calls that say it needs to be 250 feet, we have no ability to affect that. That's done by CDA and staff. We have to bring it back to us to discuss that. Or how would we just tell CDA to change it?
It would be at your, we work at your pleasure as well. So you could inform us and we could make those adjustments.
All right, so this is maybe just me understanding what our regs are. You talked about maybe the same kind of food. I know that every shopping mall, every strip mall, every place of business balances those things out. You might have one ice cream vendor and a non-compete for other ice cream vendors moving into the same shopping mall, or one Mexican food place, or one Chinese food place, or one Italian food place. Then this, in our regulations, do we prohibit that? Because again, I've seen the same food served 100 feet from the front door of a restaurant serving the same food. Did we put in our regulations a way to alleviate that?
The regulations speak more broadly. So they address proximity to a permanent food facility. So that's a very broad category under the law. So that would include restaurants, but it would also include other types of grocery stores, other types of businesses that are vending, that are selling food. So it is, and then in terms of just to elaborate a little further about, in looking at other jurisdictions and seeing the buffer distances that they use, it's something to keep in mind because that category is so broad that if you think of, a city, a block, and you think of all the businesses that are potentially selling food on that block, and then they all have 100-foot buffer distance, it becomes if that distance gets longer, then you're kind of de facto eliminating any opportunity for sidewalk vending at all on that strip. So that's part of what we were balancing and looking at that buffer distance.
It's clear to me that it's the regulations that will dictate this, and that's not part of today. Today's the ordinance, and so it's been moved by Supervisor Tam after we read. It's going to be moved by Supervisor Tam after we read the ordinance into the record.
An ordinance repealing and reenacting Chapter 3.36 and repealing Section 12.08.640 of the Alameda General Ordinance Code to regulate sidewalk vendors.
Mr. Chair, I will move to waive the full second reading to adopt the ordinance to license and regulate sidewalk vendors in the unincorporated areas of Alameda County.
Second.
Okay. A motion's been made and seconded. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Supervisor Marquez?
Aye.
Supervisor Tam?
Aye.
Supervisor Miley?
Aye.
Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Aye.
President Halbert?
Aye.
President Halbert?
Recognize Supervisor Miley.
Yes, before we leave the item, could the staff just talk about operationally how this will be implemented?
Sure.
Operationally, how it will be implemented? Sure.
Because I'm specifically referring to code enforcement will take the lead, but environmental health, sheriff's department. So just describe that one more time.
Did you want us to focus on the enforcement aspect or the administration of the permit?
The enforcement.
The enforcement. Okay, I think I'll turn that over to Ed then. How the for example, when we encounter violations, how we will address that issue.
Yes.
Okay.
Ed. Yes. Thank you. We are actually doing enforcement now with us supporting environmental health, and the sheriffs are there for our safety. So. We will continue our partnership with them with trying to address the regulations that are now going to be part of the ordinance. And we're still trying to develop a better system because the safety is our big concern. We just had an operation in Castro Valley in front of the schools, and we were already confronted by the public, not just the vendors. I think we will be able to come up with a good strategy to address neighborhoods' concerns, citizens' concerns about the sidewalk vendors. But again, like everything else, it's a balancing act that we would have to do.
Because I know for a fact some constituents have continued to complain about the recurrence of certain sidewalk vendors. And I think there's been some confiscation of some food, but I just want this to be handled. So that's what I'm trying to get assurance that between code enforcement, sheriff's department, and environmental health, if there are vendors who are, who are recalcitrant, that we will be effectively handling them.
Yes. Yesterday we did an operation. We're doing another one today, and we are trying to ramp up our frequency of being out there, even in evenings. And we were at the event this past Fall Fest in Castro Valley, where we did an operation and some food were confiscated. So we are ramping up the enforcement for sure.
And are you out there on weekends?
We were out there at this event this past weekend.
Saturday and Sunday.
Yes. So when we think there's a need for it, we will have staff.
And what's the status of additional code enforcement personnel?
At this point, we feel like once this ordinance is in effect and we establish the permitting process, we're going to be absorbing some of that work with existing staff to do the outreach, go out there, talk to the vendors, do some of the initial enforcement. And if we feel like the amount of work that we need to do is more significant, then at that point we'll determine whether or not we will make an ask for additional resources.
Yeah, very good follow-up questions. I know this is in Supervisor Miley's district, and he's very parochial about his district and Supervisor Tan. Supervisor Marquez.
Thank you, President Halbert. Thank you, staff, for the work and presentation. Have a question. Can you speak to what the current protocol is with regard to environmental health going out and inspecting if any community member raises a concern about safety outside of an incorporated part of the county. So let's say hypothetically Fremont, Hayward, Union City, how is that managed?
So each city has their own capabilities of code enforcement. In some instances, they partner with their code enforcement staff. I know for a fact, like in the city of Hayward, they use the authority of the environmental health to address the food code requirements about food safety. And after several notifications and courtesy notices, then if they arrive at the point where they feel like confiscation is the next enforcement action that they need to take, they do invite environmental health to have the authority, but they are the ones that actually confiscate the food. I'm not sure about equipment as well. So I know that other cities do the same thing, like City of Oakland does the same thing. They have environmental health there for their authority because the state requires that jurisdictions are only limited to administrative fines and fees. But under the food code, they have stricter requirements for safety of the food, which allows them to confiscate at a certain point after notification and notices are already given to the vendor.
Okay. And do you happen to know if there's any type of regional discussion trying to coordinate helping these individuals? Basically, they're just trying to earn a living and provide for their families. Is there any conversation about helping these individuals actually move into brick and mortars or being like at a centralized food hub? Do you know if there's any type of coordination, whether it's in a specific city or on a regional level? Are you aware of any type of conversations or coordination efforts?
We know that there is that need, and I've already organized two meetings with jurisdictions around us to kind of just talk about this issue, and they're all, expressing concerns and frustrations, and I will continue to have more networking, coordinating meetings with the cities around us at least, and we are also talking with some departments like ECD about trying to have some programs to help these individuals if they're interested in pursuing that, trying to become more of a brick and mortar situation. The county, the planning department actually has approved some food trucks on a temporary basis to be in certain facilities on private property and also helping them develop into a more permanent situation if that's what they want to pursue. So after this ordinance is, after we adopt this ordinance, that's the next steps I will take to try to help the vendors understand why we're doing this ordinance and also given those opportunities so that outreach effort will be on us and other departments to try to reach out to them to do that.
Okay, and then do we have different language capabilities to do that outreach effort, those outreach efforts?
I'm trying to talk to some community advocates, and they're like My Eden Voice, for example, mm-hmm. and some other community groups to help me get the word out or even try to establish some connections with them if they are willing to participate, because I know that it's easier for vendors to hear from their neighbor rather than the city that this is now a law that you need to do certain things. So I am exploring that as well.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, we have an economic development team too. They could perhaps work with people on an entrepreneurial level. So, all right. Well, ready to move on to the next item. The next item is item 6, Altamont Landfill and Research Recovery Facilities, or staff report.
Was there a vote taken?
We took the vote. Before we left the item, I thought we voted, then we came back to it. Well,
did
the clerk says
sorry.
We voted.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Somebody brought it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Item 6, Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility.
Good morning, President, Supervisors. I'm Solicitor Josefina with the Planning Department. The City of Livermore has applied to the Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility Open Space Advisory Committee for $1,500,000 to acquire in free title the 86-acre Collier Canyon property, APN 903-10-1, located in an incorporated Livermore area north of Interstate 580. The total cost of the property is $3.03 million, and the city will be using its open space funds for the remainder amount of $1.53 million. The city identifies its long-term interest in the property as preservation perpetuity for open space and management of properties of the property's biological resources. Staff recommendation is that your board, A, find the recommendation of the Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility Open Space Advisory Committee to approve a grant application from the City of Livermore in an amount not to exceed $1.5 million to fund purchase and fee title of the Collier Canyon property consisting of approximately 86 acres of real property designated by APN 903-10-1 in an incorporated Alameda County for conservation in open space purposes is consistent with the criteria set forth in the Altamont Landfill Settlement Agreement and B, delegate authority to the agency director or designate to negotiate and execute the agreement with the City of Livermore to fund purchase and fee title of the Collier Canyon property in an amount not to exceed $1.5 million, subject to review and approval as to form by county council, and return an executed copy to the clerk of the board for filing. Thank you.
Very good. Any public comment?
Yes. Kelly, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to express support for the City of Livermore's action to improve and extend protection of open space. Up until now, the areas outside the city limits have been only protected, mainly protected by Measure D, which is intended to protect open space. But obviously, you know, if you look at what happened on this parcel, there was some type of homeless encampment going on under the, you know, the auspices of Alameda County's land use authority out there. And there's a giant religious symbol built on the overlooking the freeway. I think that was on this property. There's a lot of things happening, and these kind of things are happening all around Livermore. So, you know, I'd like, maybe we could have Livermore buy all the land around Livermore, and then we could really get better protection against these kind of strange and undesirable and blight causing happenings and practices that are happening out there in the Measure D areas. You know, that's I think with this layer of protection, this owner, this what the City of Livermore will do will be to the stewardship of the land will be much better. Thank you.
No more speakers.
Very good. Could we go back to the staff report and show the photo, the aerial photo of this site? Okay. And we should all recognize, and I support this because it's something that complies with everything we've been doing, but I want to point out, this looks like a very flat piece of land. It's adjacent to a community college who has expressed a desire to, at some point, perhaps offer dormitory housing for its students. Some of its students who sleep in cars in order to survive. It's adjacent to homes right across the street. flat, arable, developable land. We have a housing shortage. We have RENA numbers to hit. And we're selling this space to the city so it can be preserved as open space. Very important topic as well. We should be preserving open space as much as possible. That's what we're doing here. But when we talk about a balance, let's not talk about the need for more land for housing. Let's not talk about the need to support our community colleges when we have a perfect good opportunity right here and we're passing it up. Or we'll just have to continue to struggle with that balance. I'll make a motion that we approve this, but I want us all to be aware that we should be mindful of all the implications and consequences of our decisions. So with that said, I'll move approval and seek a second. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Marquez?
Aye.
Supervisor Tam?
Aye.
Supervisor Miley?
Aye.
Supervisor Fortunato Bass?
Aye.
President Halbert?
Aye. The next item is item 8, Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility Open Space Advisory Committee and the California Rangeland Trust Project. Another staff report by another staff member. Welcome.
Good morning, supervisors. Thank you so much. I'm Allie Abbers with the Planning Department. So the California Rangeland Trust has applied to the Altamont Landfill and Resource Recovery Facility Open Space Advisory Committee, which I'll just call the Open Space Committee going forward, for $790,468 to establish an approximately 160-acre deeded conservation easement on the Sweet Ridge Ranch property. That's APN 99A-1820-1. And this is a working cattle ranch that's located in the unincorporated area of eastern Alameda County, east of the city of Livermore. The total cost of this project is $790,468, which includes both the encumbered value of the property, which has been estimated via appraisal at approximately $590,000, and approximately $200,000 in transaction costs. In order to make this project financially feasible for the landowner, the Open Space Committee has approved funding this project in its entirety. The purpose of this conservation easement is to preserve the property in perpetuity by maintaining its natural, scenic, agricultural, and open space characteristics while supporting agricultural activities that align with conservation objectives. The conservation easement will strictly limit activities that could undermine these preservation goals, including prohibiting conversion of the property from dry pasture, which is what it's currently used as, to agricultural uses that are more intensive and that would not be compatible with providing wildlife foraging habitat. So staff's recommendation is that your board find the recommendation of the Open Space Committee to approve a grant application from the California Rangeland Trust in an amount not to exceed $790,468 to acquire an approximately 160-acre deeded conservation easement on the Sweet Ridge Ranch property, that's APN 99A-1820-1, in unincorporated Alameda County for open space and conservation purposes, is consistent with the criteria set forth in the Altamont Landfill Settlement Agreement. And that your board delegate authority to the CDA agency director or her designee to negotiate and execute the agreement with the California Rangeland Trust to fund this deeded conservation easement, subject to review and approval as to form by county council, and return an executed copy to the clerk of the board for filing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Is there any public speakers on this item? On this item?
No speakers.
Any comments from my colleagues? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Let me just comment and say I know the Sweet family has been longtime residents, pioneers of the Tri-Valley area. The Sweet family has also been very helpful in various community activities. So seeing that this is a private transaction, fair market value achieved, agreement by the sellers. This seems like exactly the right thing to do. So I'll actually make a motion to approve staff recommendation. Is there a second? Supervisor Miley.
Second.
Thank you very much. Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Marquez.
Aye.
Supervisor Tam.
Aye.
Supervisor Miley.
Aye.
Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Aye.
President Halbert.
Aye. Very good. With that said, we've completed the regular calendar. The last item remaining is public comment on items not on today's agenda. Is there any speaker on that item?
No speakers.
Let's just wait a minute, make sure. Channeling my colleague, Supervisor Miley, always wants to wait a little bit longer. No speakers. Seeing none, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Recording stopped.